There's some spicy sauces I can't eat, like sriracha.
Sriracha, I just think that's just burning yourself.
I think I've discovered that sriracha gives me migraines.
That's interesting.
Can't touch the stuff. Shuts me down.
Wow. That's we're getting really down and personal here on the podcast. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 199. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald joins us to help preview the big game against the Cornhuskers. Darnell used to cover Nebraska, and he gives us the inside scoop on the game day experience and much more. Matt and I then preview the game, make bold predictions, and get excited for football. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Find us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Find all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, my old friend and, of course, friend of the podcast from the Daily Herald, Darnell Dixon. Darnell, welcome back.
Great to be here and great to be almost game day.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty... pretty exciting, isn't it, to finally be talking about an actual game as opposed to scrimmages or practices, or not to quote too much Allen Iverson there, but I'm done talking about practices.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's always great when the season starts. I'm even excited for the Utah-Michigan game tomorrow.
Yeah,
because it's actual college football. So
yeah, I know, and hopefully a blowout, Michigan. But we'll see. So one of the reasons, months ago when I was kind of planning out, you know, the whole summer and guests and things, I thought, well, gosh, we got to have Darnell on the week of the game because, of course, it's probably some of our fans know, or maybe they don't, that you were covering the Cornhuskers for a couple of years, lived in Lincoln you've been back now for 2 years, right?
Been back a year.
Just a year.
From 2011 to 2014.
Okay.
Not the 2014 season, but the actual preseason and spring and everything. So about probably 3.5 seasons is what it ended up being.
Yeah, so you've got way more experience with Lincoln than 99% of us. So I wanted to ask, first of all, we'll have, I'm sure, some listeners going there on Saturday and getting a chance to see that game day atmosphere. What's it like? I mean, obviously it's a large crowd, but walk us through when game days happen at Memorial Stadium, what's the atmosphere like?
Well, what's really cool about it, and I was talking to somebody about this today, the way the stadium is situated, it's basically right downtown. So you can be staying downtown. You can hit the Haymarket District, which is a little area that they've developed over near the basketball arena. It's got restaurants and shops and things. And it's the whole downtown area is just thriving. You know, some places you go for college football, the stadium's kind of off on its own, or it's on campus. It's sort
right.
of feel, but I just think it's an amazing place because of the fact of where it's situated. So there'll be tons of Nebraska fans walking downtown. They'll see BYU fans and wave to them. They'll be very friendly. Nebraska fans are very accommodating to the visitors because they want to show off. They want to show what their college football experience is like, and it's pretty nice. I mean, they have great. Areas where people can tailgate and buy things and visit. You know, if you don't mind the 95 degree weather plus 75% humidity, then you can walk around the stadium and kind of check out what's going on. I think BYU fans are going to enjoy themselves. You know, every college program likes to think that their experience is unique. And in a lot of ways, they're very similar, but they do have something special in Lincoln. And I think the fans that are going to travel are going to have a really great time.
Well, you kind of started hitting on my second question before. With part of your answer was, you know, BYU fans have on the road, not just in Independence, but in the past, have had experiences where, like, I've been to Notre Dame a couple times. The fans there are great to you, especially the older folks that are there in town that live there or travel to come to the game. On the opposite end of that spectrum is like Laramie or Boise, you know, where you may not be treated quite as well. But you're telling us the fans are probably closer to that Notre Dame side than, say, the Laramie side.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that if you're Texas or Kansas State or Miami, you're not going to be very welcome there. But one of my experience covering games there with other fans, you don't have to worry about wearing your, you know, team Jersey as you're walking down the street. I mean, people are going to smile and wave. And again, like I say, they want to show off because they think they have something pretty special there in Lincoln, and they do.
Yeah, yeah, it's a game I wish that I would be there, but I'll just have to, with a lot of us, just watch it on ABC. So getting to the game itself, obviously everyone all off season has been worried about the health of Taysom Hill and making sure that he's ready. That seems to be in place. But let's put Taysom aside. Obviously, he is the focal point of that offense. Who else has to have a big game against Nebraska to ensure a BYU victory?
Well, it's something I've thought about over the last few weeks as I've talked about this game. And the thing that really pops up to me is I think the offensive line really has to establish itself in the run game and in pass protection as well. But it seems to me that in the games that BYU's played against P5 opponents that they've lost, it's been because they couldn't handle their business on the front line. And I've been told by the coaches and by the players how great things are with the offensive line. They've got experience. They've got guys back that know the offense, and that should be to their advantage. That's what I'm going to be watching, at least initially, is how the offensive line works against Nebraska's defensive line. Great at the tackle for Nebraska, not spectacular at the ends. They have really good defensive tackles, but they have not a lot of pass rush from the defensive end. They're more stout run kind of guys. So I'll be interested to see how Tejon Karoma and his teammates on the offensive line are able to get holes for the run game. Not necessarily Taysom Hill scrambling and running. That's going to happen anyway. But to see if Algie Brown or Adam Hine or Nate Carter can bust loose 4, 5, 6 yard gains to set up some of those passing things that we think will work because of BYU's advantage with a good receiving core and a tall receiving core.
Yeah, so you brought up Karoma, and obviously Memphis announced this week their suspensions. Bronco has avoided any specificity on the suspensions to this point. Is Karoma going to be in this game, or is that still a big mystery?
It's still a mystery. There's a big mystery because for a number of reasons. One is that the way Bronco talked about it, he pretty much handled this 6 months ago as far as what was going to happen. So some guys may play, some guys may play half, some guys may play quarter. We just don't know, and he's not going to tell us. So there'll be a lot of sports writers up in that press box, get their binoculars out, and they're scribbling down numbers and start to see who's actually playing in the game. If Tejon Karoma doesn't play, BYU's in trouble, I think, with the run game, because those two defensive tackles are really good, and the guy behind Tejon is Parker Daw from Pleasant Grove, a hard worker, a guy that can get it done for you in spurts, but he's not the manhandler that Tejon Karoma is. And I think if Tejon doesn't play at all, I think BYU's in a lot of trouble with that running game.
Yeah, that could be a big deal. Well, we're going to play a little game here, Darnell, that I like to call overrated, underrated, or properly rated.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you two position groups at BYU, a little setup, and then you can tell me if they're overrated, underrated, or properly rated. So okay. The first is the wide receivers. Obviously, there's been lots of press about them this spring and into the fall. Obviously, Mitch Matthews has proved himself on the field. The flip side of that is most of the other folks, including Nick Kurtz, who may be as good or maybe better than Matthews, are unproven at this level, have not starred like they may this season. So are the wide receivers overrated, underrated, or do you think they are properly rated by the fans and the media?
Okay, fans and the media. I would say the wide receiver group is, at this point, properly rated. I think that it's good. I think they're right to be excited about them because of the experience coming back and because of the versatility, because of some of the younger players, Mike Moroni, MLP, I don't know how to pronounce it. He's really good, and I think that they're going to be good for a number of years with the group they've had. So I think they're properly rated right now. I think if you're an opponent, you might underrate them because of the things that you mentioned, that really the only established two guys are the two Mitches. The other guys have a lot to prove.
Yeah, they certainly do. But man, has Kurtz looked good this entire time. So flipping to the other side of the ball, kind of in an opposite position is the defensive secondary. Very maligned last year, though I think most good football fans realize that when you don't have a pass rush, nobody can cover for 15 seconds. Even Dion would struggle with that. So a little bit of shuffling. You've got some new safeties. You've got some cornerbacks with experience and or maybe not much at all, depending on who ends up actually starting on Saturday. Is the secondary overrated, underrated, or properly rated? And by that, I mean right now there's not a lot of expectation that they are going to be a strength of this defense.
Yeah, because of that, I'm going to say underrated. I think that there's some good talent back there. I thought there was good talent last year, but it didn't play together very well. I think that there was some dysfunction back there. I think with Nick Howell coming back and spending more of his time with the secondary, that's going to help. And I like Eric Takanaka. I like Michael Davis. I like Henneman. I think that he's going to be really, really good. Think about what he accomplished. I mean, he comes back off a mission, and they pretty much immediately throw him into the starting lineup. And the only reason he has to come out is because of his illness. And he comes back, and they put him right back in.
Yeah.
They really like Micah Hanneman, and I think that he's pretty good. So I'm going to say underrated with that group.
Yeah, and Hanneman's obviously got the bloodline with a very athletic brother who's probably going to play baseball at the highest level. So
right.
Let's kind of go to the nuts and bolts of it, Darnell. If BYU is going to win this game, what are the keys? You talked about the offensive line obviously needing to play a big game. What else is going to have to happen for that W to be in the column at the end of Saturday?
I think another really big factor, especially in a first game, is how each team reacts to adversity. Nothing's going to go exactly the way you want in that first game on either side of the ball. And I think, in my mind, I see BYU as much better prepared to handle that adversity than Nebraska is because of their experience in their system. Okay, this will be the first time, really, that Nebraska's put that system into a game. Now, they had a spring game, obviously, but that was against each other. This is the first time it's going to be tested against a real team, and I think if things go badly for Nebraska, it'll be harder for them to recover from that. Whereas BYU, I feel like because they know their system really well, both on both sides of the ball, that if they give up a long touchdown pass or if they make a turnover, that they're going to be able to come right back. And part of that is leadership. We were talking to Taysom Hill the other day about that, and he said really he feels like it's on him as the quarterback to make sure that if there is a negative play or adversity, that he is very positive about what's happening next and that team picks up on something like that. I think that he's a good guy for that. I think he's the kind of guy that the players absolutely look up to, so his attitude is reflected in them. And so, to me, that's going to showcase what happens in this ball game is if Nebraska gets a turnover, if BYU gets a turnover, how they react to that, and how they come back and establish themselves back on the field. So that's something else I would definitely be watching in that first game.
Yeah, and obviously you've hinted at it already, the change in coaches to Mike Riley this offseason from Bo Pelini. Do you think Mike Riley's a fit? Obviously, the Cornhuskers have kind of churned through some coaches a lot more than they did. Obviously, they had Osborne for forever, and then it's been kind of a struggle to find a coach. Now, granted, if they win 9 games, but that doesn't seem to satisfy the administration or certainly the fans. Is Mike Riley a good fit there? Because when he got hired, I think it raised nationally kind of like, really? You didn't go for some young stud. You went with somebody that was maybe more seasoned and a lot of people thought would retire out of Oregon State, and now he's at Nebraska. Is this maybe the right formula, or are they just trying a different formula because the other ones haven't worked?
Well, here's the thing. If you trace this from its starting point, there's a new, not new now, but in the last couple of years, a new athletic director at Nebraska named Sean Eichhorst. Bo Pelini had not made a lot of friends in the administration at Nebraska. So when they got rid of him, it was up to Sean Eichhorst to make the hire. He wanted to go with somebody that did not reflect the kind of things that Bo Pelini reflected in the media and the kind of antagonistic view that he put on things and the paranoid, all that stuff. They wanted that gone. Mike Riley is one of the nicest guys in college football coaching, if you ask a lot of people. He also has a ton of experience. He's had an NFL head coaching job. He took Oregon State from pretty much a doormat to a team that competes for bowl games and competes in their league. And the Pac-12 was pretty tough. So I think there's some good positives to the Mike Riley hire as far as it's a guy that doesn't reflect the way things have gone badly with Bo Pelini. The question you have to ask yourself, though, is will he be able to do more with more resources? You know, his system worked at Oregon State with the kind of players he got. And if he's at Nebraska, you think he's getting better players. He's recruiting different kinds of players. Right now, he doesn't have, I think, the players in his system that he wants to fit the system. So he's trying to jury-rig a few things. Tommy Armstrong is a great example of a quarterback. I've known Tommy since he was a freshman at Nebraska. And he's a tough kid. He's a big kid. He runs that that option play really well. And when he gets his shoulders turned, he's a man trying to bring down. He's a winner. He played at the highest level of Texas football, and he won a state championship. But he's not a drop-back classic kind of quarterback. So if you make him throw, and I think that's BYU's defensive goal, is to try to stop Nebraska's run game, and BYU's been pretty stout against the run, and then make Tommy Armstrong beat him over the top. Well, we already know he's missing one of his key weapons in DeMorne Personnel. We know that Kenny Bell graduated, and he's trying out. He's in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers camp, leading receiver all time at Nebraska. Then you've got Amir Abdullah with the Detroit Lions, who was a really special running back for them for several years. So lots on Tommy's shoulders, and a lot on the quarterback, or on the coach's shoulders, rather, because they have to change that offense to fit what Tommy can do. And so I think to get back to the question about Mike Riley, I think he can do it. I'm not sure it's going to happen this year for him, because there's a lot of things that he has to adjust to get it to where he feels comfortable running his own system.
Yeah, there's definitely and injuries and suspensions obviously are hurting them as well, at least for Saturday, and maybe we'll see it with injuries. You never know. So we'll get you out on this last one, Darnell. Vegas has the Cornhuskers by 6 or 7, depending on where you look. I think I see a lot of prognosticators already picking BYU, because mainly they cite Taysom Hill, senior quarterback, and those type of things. You've seen both of these teams play, a lot of players on both sides. Who do you think comes out on top on Saturday?
Well, it's a first game, and you know how those go. You know, one pick is as good as another at this point. If we break down both teams, I like to think that BYU has a good opportunity to win this game if they don't commit too many turnovers, if they are able to move the ball and force Nebraska to throw a little bit more than they want. I think that BYU can come out on top here. I think that it's a game, you know, all four of these games they're playing in this really tough month of September are games that BYU can win if they get some things to go their way. And you know, the last couple of years they've had some tough breaks, and maybe they feel like it's time that they make some of those breaks their own. And so I think they can go into Nebraska and win. It would be a monumental victory for the team if that could happen, and put them on a pretty good road as pertains to getting to a New Year's Six bowl game.
Yeah, absolutely. This would be a massive victory for the Cougars in Lincoln. Well, Darnell, thanks for coming on. We'll encourage, of course, all of our listeners to go to the Daily Herald and check out your pieces. You have a column every week. Is it Darnell's Head? What's it called?
Inside Darnell's Head.
Inside Darnell's Head. So I've known you for years. I'm not sure I want to go inside your head, Darnell.
Well, it's only a peek.
Okay, it's only a peek.
I'm gonna take somebody all the way in there. That's just way too dangerous.
Yeah, that's way too dangerous. But thanks for coming on, and of course, we'll have you on again soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Matt, it's episode 199 of the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast.
Can you believe it? We're one away from 200.
200? I don't even know what that means.
That's 200.
Number. It's one more than 199, one less than 201. So when we started this 5 years ago, did you ever think there would be an episode 199?
Listen, I've made this joke before. I'm going to make it again. I wasn't sure there'd be an episode 3.
Neither were our wives. They weren't sure of that either.
Oh, I can remember when I first, I was like, yeah, we're going to do this podcast thing. She's like, oh, that's neat. If she would have realized the time over the years that would be dedicated to the podcast, I wonder if she would have been so supportive up front.
I don't know. I do know. How many times has your wife listened to the podcast?
At least once.
Okay, at least once. I think Kathleen may be up to one now. So we've, you know, but as she always says, I have to hear you guys talk about this stuff all the time. Why am I going to spend another hour of my day listening to you?
Because it's going to be the most awesome hour of your day?
That's what I keep telling her. That's what I keep telling her. I mean, where else are you going to hear? And next week will be our big 200. We're going to bring back some great bits that we've done in the past, including Boston Batman.
Boston Batman's coming back?
He's coming back. He will be
on that's gonna be great.
The program.
Do you know where he parked the Batmobile?
We can ask him. You can ask him that. You will get a chance.
I can't wait.
You will get a chance to interview Boston Batman.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so that's coming up next week. But we've got a jam-packed program, Matt. So let's get into it straight to thecougarfan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
So, Matt, first up, women's soccer. They are rolling, my friend. They have yet to allow a goal.
That's unreal. Yes. That is unbelievable.
Three games in, they've beaten California 2-0 in Hawaii, beat Colorado and Nebraska over the weekend, started things off right for BYU by beating Nebraska in Lincoln 2-0 a couple of days ago. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. They have the, I've heard of this school, a little school north of Provo called the University of Utah. I believe that's how you say it. Then they have...
But the H is silent?
The H is silent. And then, I mean, could they have any of my more hated, if only San Diego State, they were playing them this weekend. On Friday, they have Utah. On Monday, they have Stanford in Stanford.
Stanford. I'm not sure that's what you say there.
I do. Like,
apparently it is.
It's Stanford, California, right?
Whatever. I thought it was in Pasadena.
No,
I'm not paying that close attention. Yeah,
I don't really care. Just
their mascot's a tree.
Can we just cut down the trees? Right? Just cut them down. So good luck to the women's soccer team that I think is onto something. They're top 10 right now. So it's they're a very good team, and they haven't let up a goal yet. So that's pretty cool. The women's volleyball team, Matt, also doing well, ranked, I think, 12th now. They fell a spot after dropping to USC in Los Angeles. They have another tournament coming up starting Friday. They will play St. Louis, who's not great, Arkansas Pine Bluff at the end, who's not great, but in the middle of that is also ranked number 24, Purdue.
There it is.
So Purdue, our other school, both of us. So that's also something to watch. None of those games will be on BYU TV, but I believe you can find some streaming options of the St. Louis and the Purdue game on Saturday. It should not overlap with the football game. Should not overlap.
Better with the not. Football game. I'll tell you what, it's not going to overlap with the football game in my house.
It's probably not going to overlap with any football game in your house.
That's no offense to the volleyball team at all.
Yeah, we're going to get
this is football opening weekend.
Yeah, we're going to get to this later to what games we are definitely going to watch. So Matt, moving on to some NFL news, in the bad news category, Dennis Pitta will open the season on the PUP list. Jordan Leslie was cut by the Vikings, which came as, I guess, a surprise, but they hadn't been using him much in the preseason. On the good news side, it looks like Kyle Van Noy is not as hurt as we might have thought last week on the podcast and maybe playing week one. So that's kind of our NFL update. Some other rosters coming down. We'll find out if some of those other first-year Cougars made the cut.
Hopefully Leslie will get a chance somewhere else. I think he was the guy that was kind of the consensus best chance to make an NFL roster, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you look at what Unga's been able to do, I mean, that's surprising and good to see.
Yep.
But you got to believe that Leslie gets a shot somewhere.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I thought he had a shot, if nothing else, as a special team stud. But obviously the Vikings did not think so. Their decision-making is so good, though, I hate to question them. That was a joke.
That was dripping with sarcasm.
Yes, the sarcasm, hashtag sarcasm. I guess when I speak, you shouldn't have to use that hashtag, should you?
You know, I'm pretty sure I am categorically against using hashtags in speech. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out right now. I'm frankly disappointed that you would do that. You've desecrated the podcast.
Wow. Desecrated the podcast?
Who are you, Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake? Hashtag with your little flash on the sign up there.
Jimmy Fallon is awesome. take that back.
Listen, that's not a commentary on Jimmy Fallon as a person. It's a commentary. Actually, he's making fun of using the hashtag
yes,
out loud.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Anyway, all right, let's move
whatever.
On.
Whatever. Hashtag whatever.
Hashtag you're a loser. All right. Next up.
Pretty
also,
sure that's trending.
Yeah, that's Matt is a loser. It's trending already. And we haven't even posted this. No one's even heard it. Frank Jackson from Lone Peak, All Everything. He has committed to Duke. Not a big surprise there, Matt. Does this affect you in any way? Or were you already basically imagining him in white and blue, just not the right place?
I'll be honest. My mind was already that he was going to Duke so much that when I saw this, I thought, wait a minute, what is this? Why are we talking about
this?
Yes, this
is old news.
Didn't we already break? This story already broke.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's not news just because this is where it was not as dramatic as other announcements have been in the past. In football news, Matt, not related directly to Saturday's game, because we'll get to that preview here in a minute, Taysom Hill was ranked number 8 in the preseason Heisman ranking by the USA Today. In that piece, Matt, they basically said it's the first 4 weeks of the season that will make or break his Heisman campaign. Thoughts?
Well, I go back to the same thing we talked about on last week's show. Those first four games are going to be key, obviously. But after they get through that gauntlet, I still believe that the most important game for a potential Heisman campaign by Taysom Hill is going to be the Missouri game. It's a long season after that first month, and yes, he's got to be able to make an impression deep in the season if he thinks he's going to get invited to New York. Yeah. I don't mean to say it like that, because I know that he's not playing for these individual accolades, but you understand what I'm getting at, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that is the key game, in my opinion, for any potential Heisman campaign by Taysom Hill.
I completely agree with you. Nothing else to add there. Next item of news, SaturdayBlitz.com ranked the top 7 independent football players, which basically is the top 7 players on Notre Dame and BYU. So, 3 BYU players made that list. No surprise, Taysom Hill was the top-rated player among the independents. Coming in at number 6 was defensive end Bronson Kafusi. And number 7, kind of a surprise to me, Matt, Nick Kurtz.
Yeah, that was kind of a surprise for me, too. But, you know, there's a lot of promise there. And people who follow recruiting or into this kind of stuff, they know who he is.
Yep.
And they have some expectations there as well.
Yes. I actually, quite frankly, would have put Karoma on this list. They did not. I don't think they had any offensive linemen on the list, but
listen, that's not that doesn't sizzle.
No,
nobody clicks on a list of offensive linemen.
But I will tell you what, he may be the second best player on BYU this season.
You know what? Part of me really hopes so.
Yes,
well, that's what we need. We need mean, nasty offensive linemen.
Yes,
that's what we need.
Yes, I think who was it on BYU Sports Nation? I think it was Blaine Fowler. This week on their show said something along the lines of you need 1 to 2 crazy guys. He called them stupid, but I wouldn't use that word, especially because they're bigger than me and can hurt me. But you need 2 guys that have got a little bit of mean streak on your offensive line. Not all of them, because you don't want everybody, you know, going too crazy. But I agree with him. I think you need a couple of mean guys. And Karoma, I would, if I were drafting, say you and I were just doing a schoolyard pick'em of the whole BYU team, Karoma doesn't get to the 3rd pick of our draft, does he?
No.
No. One of us, whoever had the 2nd pick, we're taking Karoma, right?
Most likely.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I would.
You know what? I don't know. He might get to the 3rd pick.
No, so I could get Hill. If I had the 1st pick, you're telling me I could get Hill and Karoma? Then game's over. You might as well just go home. Take your ball and go home, buddy.
I don't know. I feel like in that 2nd pick, you might go with a Kafusi.
You might. Kafusi is quite good. These debates are fun.
You know what about a Matthews? You know,
no.
I mean, I don't know. It depends on how you want to put this team together.
Wide receiver's too deep at BYU this year. I wouldn't take the 2nd pick with the wide receiver. But hey, it's all theoretical we're talking about here. So
that's an interesting discussion. We might want to tee that one up later.
Yes, we may. I have put it. I will put it into next week.
Put that in the agenda bank.
Put that in the agenda bank.
Put draft that in your agenda pipe and smoke it.
That's right. We should have done that in the off season, actually. Can we rewind? So, Matt, college football's coming up. Huge slate of games this weekend. A lot of them are against FCF's opponents and stuff, so they're not maybe as interesting. But, Matt, let's talk about when you have, and take BYU-Nebraska out of it because that's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. If you could only watch three games this weekend, what are you watching? And by weekend, I mean Thursday all the way to Monday night. You could only watch three football games, which, of course, is ridiculous. We'll both watch way more than three.
That's insane.
Yeah, but just for argument's sake, what are you picking?
So I think I'm opening up Thursday night. I want to see TCU. And yes. I know it's Minnesota. Minnesota's not going to be very good.
Decent. They'll be okay.
They'll be okay. But I'd like to see how TCU returns from their campaign a year ago and get an idea of what they look like. And when I look at the slate of Thursday night games, you know, UNC looks like that. UNC South Carolina could be interesting. Michigan, Utah could be interesting just because we're going to play Michigan. And
Utah's favored by 5.
I think Utah wins that game.
I don't. I think Michigan's going to be a lot better than we think there.
No, we'll see. We'll see. All right, but TCU, so Minnesota makes
I'm
my list.
I'm with you. TCU, Minnesota also made my list. My next is Colorado, Hawaii. Just kidding.
See, I don't think there's a Friday game for me.
No, there's the only one on Friday that maybe is interesting to me at all is Boise State and Washington. I mean, I don't think Washington's going to be particularly good, but I don't know. Maybe they are, and it'd be a good chance to see, but they are not on my list. All right. So what else is on your list?
See, it gets tough after that, right? You got a lot of these FCS teams, and you kind of sprung this on me at the last minute. But Texas Notre Dame is probably the other one on my list.
Sprung it on you in the last minute. I do this all the time. You should be used to it.
Yeah, I know. So Texas Notre Dame and then Wisconsin Alabama.
To me, the marquee game is Wisconsin Alabama, right?
Right.
I mean, I've heard some people say the marquee game is Arizona State and Texas A&M, which I think is ridiculous. If you had one game this weekend not called BYU that you could watch, it's Alabama and Wisconsin.
Yes. Right? And as a matter of fact, that ASU A&M game isn't even number 2.
No, it isn't for me either. It isn't for me. And let's be honest, we're going to watch that. We will most likely also watch the Ohio State-Virginia Tech game. You know, there's a bunch of games.
Oh, I'm watching them all.
There's a bunch of games that we will. Though I find it, I don't watch usually a powerhouse playing an FCS.
You're going to watch Albany play University of Buffalo?
Yes, that is top on my list. I've got some money
right
on that.
Presbyterian in Miami of Ohio?
Yeah, that looks pretty good. Grambling State is playing California.
So that's going to be a winner.
That should be
that's
a winner.
That's going to get some eyeballs.
Yes, a lot of eyeballs. So, Matt, it is time for our Nebraska preview. Oh, my gosh, we're talking about an actual game.
There's a real game? There's going to actually be a game.
Yes, there's going to be a game on Saturday. And it's
on
ABC.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, a real network and everything. Independence, it rocks. It rocks. So Matt,
I'm going to be watching. Wait a second. I'm going to be watching live football 24 hours from this moment. I'm going to be watching a college football game that matters.
Yes. Yes, you will.
Wow.
Yes, you will.
I just want to soak that in for a second. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. Can you smell that? That's the smell of football.
Sorry.
That's the smell of football. All right, Matt.
Oh, that smell. Right. Gotcha.
Yes. Not the fact that you had Mexican food today. But boom, boom. All right. So let's know our foe, Matt.
Know the foe.
As we will often reference SB Nation and friend of the podcast, Bill Connolly, his awesome previews we've talked a little bit about. Obviously, the new coach is all the buzz there. We've talked about that already. We won't talk about it a lot. They've got some players missing. The quarterback is really, in some ways, a Taysom Hill clone. a big runner, run first quarterback, probably not as good of a passer as Taysom Hill. As we look at this, Matt, though, it's a kind of similar formula to BYU, not a tremendous defense. Probably with Riley's new offense, they may be more tilted towards the offense. But, you know, do you expect this to be that first game of a new coach blunder, or do you think these guys come ready to play?
I think this is going to be the first game of a new coach. Mm. I don't know if I want to throw in the word blunder there, but I think that's what we're about to see. When you think about the state of this program towards the end of last season, I mean, it was a circus.
No, it was not good.
Okay. The coaching situation was a circus. The way that whole thing shook out was a circus. And that stuff carries over into the way the teams practice, the way the teams, and all of that kind of stuff. You go into an off season, and that's hard to recover from, you know, and I think they found a good candidate. I think they found a good coach. But this is not going to be, we wake up week one and, you know, this is, you know, the Cornhuskers of old. That's not what's about to happen.
Well, you know, if you tell me we're facing a few first-year head coaches this year, right? This does not strike fear in me, Mike Riley, as a hire like Jim Harbaugh does, right?
Oh, not even close.
I mean, it's nothing against Mike Riley. I think he did a very good job at Oregon State. I was shocked by this hire when it happened, and I still honestly, to this day, I'm not sure that this is the right hire. Now, they may prove me wrong. I mean, if they play, you know, make the playoffs in a couple years when he's got his system and his players in place, then I'll eat all the crow as necessary. But yes, I agree with you. This is going to, I think, be, there's going to be a lot of missed assignments on both sides of the ball, some broken plays based on the fact that they have yet to run this offense as a group. And the defense as a group, though they're staying in a 3-4, I believe, or are they 4-3? They're staying in the same base defense, but it's a different, you know, different play calls, different assignments. I think we're going to see a lot of that, and especially on the BYU offensive side, you're not going to probably see much of that at all. I would hope.
You shouldn't.
So another article that I enjoyed this week was on Vanquish the Foe by someone I've interacted with a bit on Twitter, Matt Brown. Matt Brown covers for SB Nation, covers the Big Ten, and he talks about who Nebraska is, how good they're going to be, and they talk about their best player is DeMorne Pearson-L. He's out, though.
Yeah, he's not playing in this game.
He will not be in the game. The defensive line is obviously a strength of theirs. But I'll tell you what, unless Caroma misses this game for a suspension, I think that's kind of negated, isn't it? If Caroma, I mean, this offensive line's experienced and good. Do you see any Nebraska, any place where they have a big advantage over BYU?
I don't think so. I think these are two pretty evenly matched teams.
Yes.
And, you know, I hate to sound so cliche when I say something like this, but this is going to come down to execution.
You are Captain Cliche.
But I think, as you've already captured, I think that the BYU team has been, they've been in the system longer. You know, we're missing Jamal. They're missing Pearson-L. You know, I don't know how comparable that is, but he's probably their best. He's probably their best weapon.
Is he related to Kal-El or Jor-El?
Really? Really? We're really going to do that right now?
Of course I am. I'm a total geek.
You are such a geek.
I couldn't not make that joke.
How did you get to be so geeky?
Stop it. Our oldest brother can quote Klingon. Don't.
He's a bigger geek than you are.
He is a bigger geek than me. I'm not even number one.
Oh, so, I can't wait till he listens to this and texts us both right away.
Yeah.
He's a geek. Yeah. He has a Klingon dictionary.
Well, he says he no longer owns it, but I believe that's
you know
false.
What? Next time I'm over at his house, I'm going to go looking for it.
Go find it for us. The point is, I think you're right. I if Pearson-L's healthy, my biggest fear would be a return touchdown.
That's a good point.
And now special teams, we've got a punter unproven. They're not as big of a worry as they would have been. That being said, they still have some tall, athletic guys on both sides of the ball that could prove to be matchup problems, but we'll see. I mean, they've got big defensive backs that are like 6'1". You know,
They
this
gave
is.
up so many yards
I
on the
know.
ground. I
I
just feel
know.
like Taysom Hill is going to go
He could have,
crazy.
yeah, he could have 200 yards. You know, he could run, he could have two or three long runs. And by long, I mean like longer than 10, 15 yards. Unless you
He
got.
need Jen he needs is he needs highlight films of him hurdling Nebraska players. That's what he needs. I don't know if that's going to happen,
No,
but.
I, yeah, it may not. So Matt, one of the things that is hovering over this game, and we'll move off Nebraska for a minute, is the potential suspensions. Memphis added today, this week, announced what players would be suspended, how long. Bronco is not doing that. Matt, does Bronco owe it to the fans and other people involved with the program to announce the suspensions ahead of time?
No, and I've always felt this way. Announcing the suspensions ahead of time is stupid.
I
It's
totally agree with
pointless.
you.
What you're playing cards. You're setting your cards down on the table. I mean, we already know that Nebraska's going to be down five players off of suspensions for this game this Saturday. Why would you tell your opponent this?
Yeah,
Why would you tell them this?
I
You
have
know?
absolutely no idea. And the fans are saying we deserve to know. I don't even know what that means.
You
Like,
don't deserve to know.
why do you
That's
need to know?
What does
Like,
this do for you?
starting when they line up on the first offensive play, and probably before that, right? Because they may be in plain clothes, or heck, they may not even be on the
They might not
sideline.
travel, right?
You know, we're going to find out prior to game time at some point who's suspended.
Not if he
And
dresses them.
well, here's the other thing. If somebody's suspended for half and Karoma doesn't come out for the first series, you're going to figure that out, right? Same with Nacua, and if Prater's out there at one of the safety positions instead of him. I look at it and I say his job is to, I mean, Bronco gets all this crap for not caring about winning, which I think is garbage. But then when he does something that obviously, I mean, I don't know how big of a help it is, but I think if Karoma's suspended for this game, you don't want to tell anybody till you know the last possible minute to ensure the other team hasn't prepared otherwise.
But you
I'm
know,
with you.
I know that leading up to what happened after that game, there was a lot going on, in between the opening and closing whistles here, right?
Yes.
I know there was a lot going on there. But if you're on the field after a game and you get jumped by a group of players from another team, and they tackle you to the ground and they're kicking you in the head, I see no reason that why you should be suspended for a second.
See, the only, and again, we don't have everything that happened on tape. We have a lot of it on tape, but we don't have everything. I'll say this. I don't have any problem with people defending themselves or their teammates. I never have, and I never will. If somebody else starts pounding the heck out of your teammate, I don't think there's anything wrong with you trying to help your teammate.
You've got it. Somebody's got to get in there.
Nacua's sucker punch looks terrible. I don't know
Yeah.
how much damage it actually did physically, but it's classless, and you can't do that. Defending yourself and somebody else is fine. Taking a shot at somebody who you're mad at from behind, I can't go with that. Now, that being said, I don't care how BYU disciplines these players. If it's suspensions, if it's, you know, community service hours, whatever it is that BYU, the administration, and Bronco all get together and decide is the right thing to do. If there's outrage by Utah fans or whoever, if Karoma doesn't get suspended, my response always is it was handled in-house and they took care of it. This is not an administration or staff that takes it easy on people that do dumb things.
Well, and I don't mean to be a real homer on this, and we can move on from the topic. But the other thing for me is, how long ago was this?
A long
This
time.
is when you hand out the punishment, September of the following year. That's not how you work discipline. That's not how you fix it.
But that's what the media and fans want, right?
That's silly to me.
I'm totally with you.
There's plenty of stuff you can do
if they and if
closer
they
to the event to discipline a player. That what you want to know 9 months later is that this kid has learned his lesson and he's not going to do this again. He's grown up and you're ready to move on. 9 months later, you should be ready. Everybody should just be ready to move on.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Matt. So let us move on. Depth chart, thanks to Jay Drew, tweeted out the first depth chart. Bronco, in his media access this week, has talked a little bit about it. Matt, any surprises for you on the depth chart? Did anybody end up in a spot where you said, oh, I wasn't predicting that?
You know, I nothing real big. I mean, because we went through and talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, I am happy to see Lapu'ahu getting the start, getting the nod there at right tackle.
Yep.
You know, but there's nothing in here where I'm just like totally blown away.
Yeah, we talked about this one before. You and I both believed they were doing this. Some of the media thought and fans thought they were just kind of messing around towards the end of camp. But Jordan Prater is the free safety behind Kai Nakua. That's a real thing. I'm not saying Prater won't play some cornerback if Hanneman or Davis were to get hurt. I'm just saying Prater's going to play safety this year.
Or maybe Davis doesn't play on Saturday.
You don't know, right? But the one that I'm excited about is Hanneman, just because all reports are this kid, I mean, his brother's in the minor leagues in baseball, this kid is a phenomenal athlete. And typically BYU does not put their best athletes in the defensive secondary. That's not typically where we have the strength in recruiting and where we put the best ones. But if this guy can figure out the fundamentals, him and Davis are both fast, athletic, and they're not small.
Yeah, they sure aren't.
You know, Hanneman.
Hanneman's going to lay the lumber on somebody.
I mean, assuming he can tackle, he's going to hit some people hard. And of course, Davis is a little thinner, a little taller, but and can run, right? I mean, if these two can figure out the fundamentals to the position, the cornerbacks could be okay. I'm not going to say anything like they're going to be the strength of the defense or anything, but they could be at the end of the year us saying, oh, they weren't a liability.
Yeah, but I feel like we say that every year. You know, I'd love to have a year where we have somebody a corner that's just a lockdown, you know, blow people up, ball hawk corner. Yes. Are we ever going to have that?
We've had it in the past.
Yeah.
But rarely. It's pretty rare. I mean, we have great players at BYU cycle through almost every position, not every year, but on a pretty regular basis, linebacker, defensive line, offensive line, running back, wide receiver, quarterback, of course. The defensive secondary, that's especially on the corners. Maybe safety is safe to say we've had some really good guys cycle through there. But, man, on the corner, it's not as often. It just isn't. Matt, I would point out two other things that I thought were interesting. Johnny Lenihan, Johnny Rugby, or whatever we want to call him, is listed as the punter or Rhett Almond. So that's not exactly a huge endorsement. And then the punt returner were listed
this is
as
interesting.
Takanaka and Hanneman. Dye or Juergens or one of the wide receivers. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that one is interesting, actually. That I had not thought about, but you know, I'd love to see Hanneman return a punt.
Yeah, it'd be fun. It'll be fun to see him and Takanaka. Maybe he's got. They saw some things this fall that will encourage them there. So that's the depth chart, Matt. Let's look at. There's a Nebraska writer who wrote about this matchup in. Let me make sure I'm getting the right newspaper here. The Journal Star, he uses a lot of Super Mario in it, with logos on the shells of the turtles, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, Matt, I wish you could play the game, though. Unfortunately, they didn't let you play the game.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, he gives the BYU game a level of difficulty of a 7, okay? Which I think is probably, based on looking at the other ratings, probably pretty fair. But this is what he says about the defense, Matt. Look for a high-scoring contest with both teams in the 30s or even the 40s. BYU's defense is beyond suspect. So Nebraska should be able to squeak out a win. Matt, he is expecting the defense to be as bad as last year. You and I have basically both gone on record that we say they won't. Not maybe be great, but not as bad as last year. Do you think this is where BYU is going to be consistently underrated early this season?
Yes, and I hope the coaching staff has done the same thing.
Yes. I hope their coaching staff thinks we're going to be able to run and throw all over these guys.
One of the most significant problems the defense had last year was where they were putting Bronson Cafusi.
Yes.
They've solved that problem.
Yes.
And I feel really good about what they're doing to linebacker right now.
I feel good too.
You look at these linebackers, I mean, these I feel good about these guys.
Yeah.
You know, Warner, Longy, Pakula, JLD, I mean, I feel good about these guys.
Yeah.
I think they're going to turn some heads.
Yeah. I think this linebacker crew will either end up becoming maybe not the strongest we've ever had or anything close to that. As pointed out recently, I've seen it a few times, that linebacker crew in 2013 may all play in the NFL. So I'm not sure it's going to be that kind of level. But I think it could be the strength of the defense at the end of the year. Right now, we're saying the defensive line because of their experience. I think it's very likely mid-season we're going, no, the strength of the defense is that linebacker core. The other piece of this that I think they're missing with the defense is Bronco Mendenhall calling the plays.
Yep.
I just think there's going to be a bump. Now, again, I don't expect this defense to be even in the top 5 or 6 that Broncos ever had. I don't think they'll be that good. I hope they are that good. But they don't need to be for BYU to win 10 games. They don't have to be a top 25 defense.
Right.
If they can just not give up huge plays all the time, then it'll be a big difference. So, Matt, I asked the same question of Darnell, but I'll ask it of you. Right now, everyone's talking about the wide receiver group as, you know, this awesome group, right? You've got Matthews and Kurtz, the Twin Towers, they're even being called. And they're saying it's deep and talented and all these things. So, Matt, I'm going to throw a few numbers at you. All right, you ready for these numbers?
Yeah, let's do it. What do you got?
BYU receivers not named Mitch Matthews returning to the program. Wide receivers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I told you last year that all the wide receivers combined returning, not named Miss Matthews, had less than 50 catches, would you believe me?
Yeah, I would.
It's a little north of 50, but not much. If I told you that BYU receivers, not named Mitch Matthews, accounted for only, who are coming back, only 6 touchdowns, would you believe me?
I would almost feel like that was high.
They accounted for, Juergens had 4, Hauk had 2, and then, let's see, that's it. So they had 6.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I think Kurtz is highly talented. I've already gone on record saying I think he's going to lead the team in receptions and yards. Okay. After Matthews and Kurtz, this group is, besides Juergens, almost completely unproven, or they've been in the program for a while and done nothing. I think we might be starting to overrate the group as a whole. Not Matthews and Kurtz, but the group as a whole. Am I off, or you feel the same way?
I think we've definitely I think it's premature to crown these guys elite and dangerous.
Yes, which, you know, a lot of people, I've heard both of those words uttered by press and fans this week about that group.
But I'm going to go ahead and point out that not a few minutes ago, when we were drafting a little bit players, when I said I might go for Matthews, your response was, this wide receiver group is way too deep to pick a receiver that early.
That is what I said.
So I mean, and we I think we've all kind of bought into that a little bit, but when you sit back and look at the numbers and see what have these guys actually done on a Division I playing field, you know, it's a whole lot of they look good in practice, and you know, that hasn't panned out real well at some points in the past.
Yeah. Jay Keeps. Remember 2 years ago when we were saying this about the defensive backs, that they'd be the
Oh.
strength? I said that on this podcast 2 years ago, that the
That's
strength of the defense 2 years ago, that's right. It was a defense that had four linebackers who will likely all play in the NFL on it. I said that the defensive backs could be the. We sometimes get caught up in this spring, fall football hype and forget that until you prove it, it's all practice.
Yeah, there's a difference between practice MVPs and players, right?
Yes. Yes,
And right now, we
absolutely.
just don't know. I mean, these guys could all be players. I hope that they are.
Heck, Kurtz, we might all be wrong on Kurtz. I think he's going to have a monster year, but remember, he has not proved it at this level yet. That's
Yeah, I think
just,
he will, though.
I think he will. So, Matt, if BYU wins, what is something that most likely will have happened if BYU wins?
Taysom Hill has a highlight reel.
Okay. All right. I say if BYU wins, the most likely has happened is they dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Look at us, Captain Cliche and his friend Captain Obvious.
How about this? How about this one? You ready for this?
Oh yeah, sure. Fire away, buddy.
Two, if we win, two sacks by a linebacker.
Woo! Whoa, that's bold.
Yeah.
That's got some spicy sauce on it.
Oh, I'm getting crazy now.
You are getting crazy. Did I just say it has spicy sauce on it?
I don't know what that
I don't
means.
know. Luckily,
There's
this
some
isn't a
spicy
live
sauces
program.
I can't eat, like sriracha.
Sriracha, I just think that's just burning yourself.
I
That's.
think I've discovered that sriracha gives me migraines.
That's interesting.
Can't touch the stuff. Shuts me down.
Wow. We're getting really down and personal here on the podcast.
It's kind of a moment. We just had a
Yeah,
moment
we
here on the
did.
podcast.
We did just have a moment that I'll probably need to
But
edit out.
I said sriracha. I pronounced it pretty clearly. It
Yes,
doesn't
you did.
sound like I said anything
You
else.
didn't say anything like Bearcats and made it or something.
Really? We're
Oh,
never
I'm
gonna we're
good.
not gonna go a week this whole season without one of us bringing up the fact that you said a bear and a cat made it. We're not gonna go a week this whole season.
Tell you this much. The week we preview that Cincinnati game. Is going to be. I don't know if we'll be able to make it through that podcast without laughing hysterically at our own dumb jokes.
Oh, we are. Oh, wow.
Highly predictable. So, Matt, if BYU loses, what likely has happened?
We couldn't get any pressure on the quarterback.
Okay.
And we've discovered that we don't have a running back.
I think we lose the turnover battle and the. Were unable to throw over the top on their defense. No deep passing. So I think those are things that happen if we lose. So Matt, it's time for a little game of true or false.
Are you going to write this down again? Hold us accountable? Are we
No.
really? Are we?
No, no,
Okay, good.
no. No accountability this
Okay,
on
blue
this
goggles
show.
are going on then.
Blue goggles can be on. I'm actually putting on my BYU Sports Nation blue goggles as we
All right,
speak.
let's do it.
Actually, it's kind of hard to see with these on, so I'm going to take them off. All right. Taysom Hill throws for 280 yards and rushes for more than 100. True or false?
Let it be true, my friend.
Truth! Speak truth, brother. I'm with you. Taysom Hill eclipses both of those numbers. Nick Kurtz leads the team in targets. True or
I'm going to go
false?
ahead and say false on this one. And I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to go ahead and say false.
Who's going to lead the team in targets, Mr. Smarty
Matthews.
Pants? I'm going to throw out another name. Mitchell Juergens leads the team in targets.
I thought about Juergens too. And I think it's probably one of those two guys. I think Kurtz is the over-the-top target.
I
No?
think if the running game, absolutely, Kurtz is the over-the-top target. I think if the running game stalls, they go to a short passing game in which Juergens coming out of the backfield or wide receiver screens basically becomes a running back. You know what I mean? If they can't get anything going with the running backs. So I think it could be Juergens.
I think they're going to set Kurtz up. I guess is a better word I'm trying to say. There, he's not going to be like the go-to guy. I think they're going to set up plays for Kurtz.
Yes, he may not lead the team in targets, but he likely could lead the team in yards received.
Yes.
Okay, true or false, Matt, Nate Carter leads the team in non-Taysom Hill carries.
True.
I believe that is false.
Oh, really?
Jurgens? Algie Brown.
Algie Brown.
Algie Brown leads the team.
I thought you were getting really out of bounds here.
Well, and I don't think... I don't think any of that group eclipses 12 carries. And Taysom will lead the team in rushing. BYU defense, true or false, will have more than 3 sacks.
I'm already on record for saying I think there's going to be 2 sacks by linebackers, and I'm definitely not leaving Bronson Kafusi out of the fun. I'm going to go ahead and say true.
True! I'm with you. I'm with you as well. I think they will have more than 3 sacks. So, Matt, I think everybody's probably had a pretty good guess as to who we think is going to win this game. Let's do the tale of the tape, as you will. BYU is an underdog in this game, Matt. They are 7 points, according to Vegas. So let's first pick against the line. If you were a betting man, who you taking, the points and Nebraska, or you taking BYU?
I'm taking BYU.
I am as well. Over under 60 points. Matt, are you taking the over or the under on combined 60 points?
Taking the over.
I am also taking the over. Wow. Okay, Matt. Well, you get it. This is the first game of the season, and because I am the most magnanimous Mangum, I shall let you go first. Your prediction, sir.
So I think BYU wins this game. I do think a lot of points are going to be scored. I think that our defense is going to step up on a couple of crucial drives, holding Nebraska to a field goals where they are not going to be able to slow down the Taysom Hill attack. Final score, 35-27.
35-27. Interesting, interesting. I also believe that the defense will often bend, but often not break. I think the offense will struggle at times to run the football, but in the end, Hill will break several large runs and have a couple of big games in the a couple of big passes in the passing game. 31-20, BYU wins this one. I think kind of comfortably, Matt. Which thinking so makes me very nervous. Very nervous.
Don't get too comfortable. Don't get too comfortable.
I don't like
this. But this is going to be a fun game.
Even without my blue goggles on, I do not like new coaches in their first game, even at home. Against a senior quarterback and a experienced offense.
You know, and it was Taysom this week who was making comments about, hey, we've gone on the road and beat teams that were big-time programs before. We've done this before.
I'm not sure Nebraska is much better than Texas was last year. They're probably better, but not by leaps and bounds.
But the environment probably is going to feel very similar. You know, the stadium, the history behind the program, all that kind of stuff.
Darnell talking about the atmosphere made me like want to just like pack, just hop in the car and drive to Lincoln, and scout my way into that thing, which would probably cost me like $1 billion. But
you know, several years ago when I finished school at BYU, and a couple months after that we were moving out to Virginia, and I made my wife stop at any town we went remotely near that had a college football stadium in it, we had to get off the freeway and go to the stadium.
So go ahead.
One of those stops was Lincoln, Nebraska, but I think I know where you're about to go.
We did that in what year was that? 90.
Summer of 99.
Summer of 99. We drove across. We stopped in Lincoln and at Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, we did. And if I remember correctly, we stayed at a really shady hotel in Lincoln.
We did. It was rather cheap.
And maybe Columbus.
We were poor. Oh,
we go to the shoe.
You are correct, sir. Yes.
And we thought it was a really scary neighborhood. And then we woke up and it was even worse than we had thought.
Yeah. It was actually worse in the light of day.
Yes.
I do remember that.
It felt safer at night.
You couldn't see it. We did, but man, we were poor, brother. We had
than sleeping in the car.
We were in my Hyundai Elantra, and you know, and booking it across the United States because we took our time. We did 3 days. We didn't do that time in two, right?
I want to say we did do it in three.
Yeah, we took our time because we stayed in Lincoln and then we stayed in Columbus, right?
I think that's right.
Oh, well, it's been a long time, but memories, Matt. A little walk down memory lane
Oh,
for the listeners, and
glad we could share that with all y'all.
they're all saying, why did you share that? So, Matt, we are out of time. We were going to do Answering Machine this week, but we will have to save that for another week. Our favorite game of Answering Machine next week on the podcast. Oh, by the way, real football is happening this weekend.
Yes.
By the time you are listening to this podcast, this is Wednesday night. It'll be posted likely Wednesday night, but likely you may be listening to this on Thursday as you're getting psyched for some Thursday night college football action.
It's game day, baby.
So get your blue goggles, your blue, t-shirts. I will be wearing most likely the new game day t-shirt, the one that says Cougars in the shape of a football,
Pretty sweet.
as well as my royal blue BYU hat. And when I say wearing that, I'll probably put it on Friday morning and not take it off until sometime Monday.
That a boy. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, as you should be, as you should be. So next week we will of course recap Nebraska. We'll preview Boise State, wow, this is going to be a fun few podcasts. I don't know what we're going to do when we're previewing Wagner. I don't know. Maybe that's the week we draft all the players.
That's kind of, we're going to save that for the off season, but isn't that basically the same thing?
It's kind of the same thing. So
But who
anyway,
cares about Wagner? We got Nebraska
that's
this
right.
week,
We got
baby.
at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln.
Oh,
It's
that's awesome.
fantastic. It's fantastic. So, of course, we would encourage all of you to go to cougarfan.com to get all of your Cougar news. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Get the podcast on the web or on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! We'll be right back.